Okay, today is the 28th of Adar, and it is March 15th, and we are doing the second half of the first chapter of Shmuel Bet, which is the eulogy that David gives for Shaul and Yonatan. So if you remember last week and the week before, because we had this double story of the deaths of Shaul, especially, and Yonatan, where at the end of Shmuel Aleph, it looks like Shaul commits suicide. And here, the beginning of Shmuel Bet, which again we talked about as an artificial separation, the beginning of Shmuel Bet, this Amalekite young man comes and says that, in fact, he finished the job on Shaul. David doesn't really trust him, and David actually kills him for even saying that he would have touched the anointed one of Hashem. We had a whole discussion about Amalekites and being converts, if they could or not. And now, this is David's official eulogy for Shaul and Yonatan, and it is perhaps one of the most famous passages of all of Tanakh. Chaim! Okay, somebody has to share. Sorry. So it is what, and when I say one of the most famous passages, and you're looking at me like, I mean, you will recognize several lines in here. But, for instance, my husband and I just saw, it's the Israeli Film Festival going on right now. So, my husband and I just saw this beautiful film called An Israeli Love Story. And it's by this woman who is a professional actress and director. Her name is Pnina Guri in Israel. And it's a story about a short episode in her life in 1947 in Israel, in the north. And she falls in love with this young man who, in real life, is the son of President Ben Tzvi, who was the second president of Israel. And he was one of the founders of a kibbutz near her moshav, where she grew up, and they fall in love, and they plan to get married. And if you know Israeli history, it's not even a spoiler. He's killed a few days before the wedding. In the movie, they have it like the day before. And they're completely secular Israelis. And this is what this was the end of the movie, this poem, this eulogy. And so I think among Israeli society, this is probably one of the most famous things, because unfortunately, it has to be said a lot. It's like the way to eulogize soldiers. I had a very visceral reaction to it the first time I read it. I've read it now several times in preparing for this year, so hopefully we'll get through it. But, you know, having a son who's now part of that world definitely makes it a lot more meaningful. Okay, so you see how I structured it in the Hebrew into a chiastic structure. So again, we haven't talked about chiasms in a long time, so chiasm is based on the Greek letter that looks like an X, the letter chi or chi. And this, I always have to say this whenever I explain it. So chiasm in English literature means that if you were to draw lines from the related parts of a poem or a sentence or whatever it is, it would make an X. So the example I always use is roses are red, violets are blue. So if you put those two lines, one on top of each other, roses and violets you draw a line, and then blue and violet you draw a line, and they would make parallel lines, and that's called parallel structure. Okay? Now, if you said roses are red, blue are violets, then you suddenly get an X, and that's chiastic structure. Now, that would be A, B, B, A. Okay? Right. A, B, B, A. So in biblical studies, they continue to call it chiastic even when you add more and more elements, whereas in English literature studies, once you add more than four elements to it, they call it symmetry. Okay? So this, we're going to stick to it. We're going to call it chiastic structure because it's biblical studies. But this is obviously A, B, C, B, A. And so there's more elements, so symmetry, chiasm, whatever you want to call it. And I bolded italicized some of the repetitions in the structure. So if you just look at it before we even talk about it, you can see that in the first part, so the first part is 17 and 18, 19, which is like the introduction, no, 17, 18, sorry, which is the introduction. And then you have 19 and then 20, where we see Shaul's name. And then if you see in, that's 21 actually, but that's part of the same stitch as 20 and 21. And then you have 22 and 23, where both Shaul and Yonatan are mentioned. And you can even see the way that they're mentioned. Do you see the bolded? The way they're mentioned is in a chiastic structure. Yonatan, Shaul, Shaul, Yonatan. Do you see that? Okay. And then you have Shaul by himself, and then it ends with Yonatan by himself twice. So it starts out David talking about Shaul, and then he talks about both of them together, and then he ends with Yonatan. Okay, so I think we'll read it as one complete unit first, and then we'll go over some of the issues in the commentary. Or no, we're not going to read it. We're going to read the introduction. We'll talk about the introduction a little bit, and then we'll read the poem as a unit, and then we'll talk about the commentary on that. Okay, so it starts out, Ve'yekonen David et hakina hazot al Shaul ve'al Yonatan beno. So who knows a word? Who knows the word kina?
Sure, kina.
Yeah, kina on Echa. Yeah, I mean, on Tisha B'Av. Right, Lamentations. Mm-hmm. I think we sometimes, right, and David lamented Lamentations. I think we sometimes even call it a Jeremiad because Jeremiah wrote Echa. So it's introduced. So this isn't, we had when Sarah died, Avraham Vayispod, that he did a hesped, which is what we usually call a eulogy, right? So when I've been reading up on this in terms of the translation, rather than eulogy, sometimes they'll translate it as dirge, because it's really much more than just a eulogy. It's this lamentation. It's really the best word for it. So just notice it doesn't say hesped, vayispod. It says vayikonen, David. So David lamented with this lamentation on Shaul and on Yonatan, his son. Obviously, Shaul had more sons that, in fact, died in the battle, but Yonatan is who he was close to. Vayomer lelamed b'nei Yehuda kashet, hine k'tuva al sefer hayashar. And he said to teach the sons of Judah the bow. Oh, this is why this poem was such a big deal in the movie that I saw, because the name of the kibbutz that Ben Zvi's son, I think his name was Eli, oh, in the movie, so the author of the, it was originally a monologue play, and then she turned it into a movie. I think maybe somebody else did, but it's very popular in Israel. So her real name is Pnina, and in the movie it's Margalit, which has the same meaning. So, okay, so the name of the kibbutz where the movie took, where the Eli, the one who was killed, established, was called Kibbutz Keshet from this. And so in the movie, the young woman asks him, oh, is that because of the rainbow, because of Noach? And he says, no, actually, it's because of David and Yonatan and the bow. And in fact, they really did have to defend themselves and be strong in that way. Okay, so he taught to teach the sons of Yehuda the bow. And it is written in the book of Hayashar, the straight or the just. Okay, so there's a few things here. It says to teach the sons of Yehuda. Now this is interesting because where are Shaul and Yonatan from? Which Shevet? Who remembers? This is like Binyamin, right? Binyamin, which is kind of the counterpart to Yehuda. It's definitely not Yehuda. Binyamin is the son of Rachel, and Yehuda is the son of Leah. And David obviously comes from Yehuda. So what it's saying almost is, and Binyamin, as we've talked about kind of throughout our study, Binyamin was known as I think the Hebrew word is beryonim, these ruffians. They were known as strong and big, and that's why and for good and for bad. For bad, we see in the awful story of the Pilegish Begiva, the concubine on the hill, and that happened in the land of Binyamin. And also for good in this case, that David is attributing the nation of Israel's success in fighting in war to people of Binyamin teaching them. That it seems to be saying that they needed Shaul and Yonatan to teach them how to use the bow. And we even saw, does anybody remember where we saw Yonatan with his bow before?
When he was warning David, yeah, he was going to shoot the arrow. Yeah.
Right, so he was an expert archer.
Yeah.
That she shot the arrow when David was trying to convince Yonatan that indeed Shaul hated him, was out to get him. And And then when Yonatan was convinced after he didn't show up at the Rosh Chodesh meal, it's funny, that came up in my other life, my other classes, with proving that Rosh Chodesh was 2 days even before the moon calculations. And I knew it because I taught it. It was exciting. So Yonatan is able to tell David in this way, in his expert archery, by shooting the bow in the way to show him that indeed he was right. His father did hate him and he needed to escape. And then that set off the whole story of Nov and the priests being killed that we talked about also before. Okay, so now, what is this Sefer HaYashar? Okay, so we have 24 books of the Bible, and one of them is not called HaYashar. So every once in a while in Tanakh, I think it happens in Tehillim also, there's references to these other books that aren't part of the canon, okay? So I brought in a few commentaries on this. So the first time we actually... This book is actually mentioned in Sefer Yehoshua in a very famous story. Maybe we'll just read it in English. So if you go to page 2, that's the English. So it's Sefer Yehoshua, chapter 10. Then Joshua spoke to the Lord on the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel, and he said, in the sight of Israel, sun, stand still upon Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Ayalon. You guys all know the story when the sun stood still for Joshua. I once heard somebody talk about how in South America there was some legend or something that the moon stood still at that, like, and they could calculate it, that it was around the same corresponding time. I don't know where it was, but I remember hearing that. And the sun stood still and the moon stayed until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Yashar? And then you look in parentheses, because this is going according to one of the commentaries, which is the Torah. So the sun stood still in the midst of the heaven, and it did not hasten to go down exactly a whole day. And there was no day like that before it or after it that the Lord hearkened to the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. So right away you can tell the importance that David is putting on Yonatan and Shaul by having it written in the book of Yashar, which the only other thing that we know is recorded in there is this miraculous event of the sun standing still to allow Yeshua to fight his war. We don't see it anywhere else in Tanakh, and the rabbis, of course, go into what this book might be. So let's just read it in the English. So page 2 again, and the English is from Sfaria. The Gemara cites another exposition with regard to the book of Yashar. It is written and said to teach the sons of Judah the bow. So that's our verse in the Kina. Behold, it is written in the book of Yashar. The Gemara again asks, what is the book of Yashar? Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says that Rabbi Yochanan says, this is the book of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who were called Yesharim. As it is written with regard to them, let me die the death of the righteous, and let my end be like his. Anybody want to take a wild guess who said that? From Bamidbar? Kaf Gimel. So it has to be a character in Bamidbar. I'll give you a hint. It's not named after him. Parsha's not named after him. But he's not Jewish. I'll give you another hint. So it's Bilam, the prophet. He's in Parshat Balak. Okay? So Bilam, when he is being asked to curse the Jewish people by Balak 3 different times, and each time he ends up blessing the Jewish people, and one of the things he says is, let me die the death of the righteous, and let my end be like his. Okay, he wants, but of course he ends up dying a horrible death. I think Moshe actually kills him in one of the battles. The Gemara and if we have time later, but it's on your source sheet, it's in English, the Nitziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who his son, Hebraicized Berlin, and founded Bar Ilan University, okay? So he wrote a beautiful introduction to Bereshit explaining why it's called Sefer HaYashar. So we'll see if we have time. It wasn't so relevant to what we were talking about, but it's really beautiful. Okay, so that is the first opinion, that it's Genesis. The Gemara further analyzes the verse in Shmuel, and where is it alluded to in Bereshit that Yehuda must be taught to use the bow? The verse states, Yehuda, your brother, shall praise you, your hand shall be on the nape of your enemies. The Gemara explains, what is the form of warfare that requires one hand to be held opposite the nape? You must say that this is referring to the use of a bow. This is a referent on the verse in Shmuel. The Gemara cites a different interpretation. Rabbi Elazar says that the book of Yashar is the book of Devarim. And why did they call it the book of Yashar? As is written, and you shall do that which is right, Yashar, and good in the sight of the Lord. This is right after the Ten Commandments. I think it's Parshat Vatzchanan. And where is it alluded to in Devarim that Yehuda must be taught to use the bow? The verse states, and this is for Yehuda, and he said, hear, Lord, the voice of Yehuda, and bring him unto his people. His hands shall contend for him. What is the form of wherefore that requires the use of two hands? You must say that this is referring to the use of the bow. This is referent to the verse in Shema. Okay, so far we have it could be Breishit, and now we have it could be Devarim. The Gemara provides yet another explanation. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani says that the book of Yashar is the book of Judges. And why did they call it the book of Yashar? As it is written, in those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right, Yashar, in his own eyes. And where is it alluded to in Judges that Judah must be taught to use a bow? The verse states, only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war. What is the form of warfare that requires teaching? You must say that this is referring to use of a bow. Okay, so the rabbis offer three different opinions. Bereshit, which would be sort of the seed of the Jewish people. And then Devarim, which would represent us as a nation about to enter the land of Israel. And then Shoftim, which is where we've conquered the land and we're settled in the land of Israel. We have leaders. So it's three different stages of the Jewish people. Shoftim doesn't make much sense because the first reference is in the book of Yehoshua, which precedes Shoftim. But I think it's probably much more metaphorical as to where it represents in the stage of the Jewish people's lives. Okay, and then just another couple explanations on Sefer HaYashar. So in the Talmud Yerushalmi, so page 3, Halo Hiktaval Sefer Yashar, Train Amarin, they said these could be two different things. Chad Amar is a Sefer Breishit, V'charan Amar is a Chumash HaPikudim. So Yerushalmi offered yet another. It says either it's Breishit or Chumash HaPikudim. Anybody know what Pikudim is the rabbinic word for? Which of the books of the Chumash? Pikudim means counting. Numbers, Bamidbar, right? Okay, so the Yerushalmi doesn't give an explanation, so I don't know. But just so you see the vast differences between what it is, Ralbag. So this is Gersonides. V'hine Sefer HaYashar Achshov Shaya Nikra Kach V'Abed Al HaGalut V'Kvar Rabu Bo HaPerushim L'Rabbeinu. So the Gersonides says that. He brings in, at the end, all the different explanations of the rabbis, but according to his opinion, he says, I think that it was called this, ve'avad im hagalut, and it was lost with the exiles. Mm-hmm. So he actually thinks that it is a separate book, which is interesting. Okay, Mitzudat David, halohi hadavar hahi halok tuva behavtecha b'sefer yashar v'hi ha-torah. So the Mitzvah David is the first one to say it's the entire Torah, which is what was said in the translation. Shenemar bal Ephraim v'zaro yamalei hagoyim. V'hu hayom hazeh shamdu ha-shamash v'ayarech le'ashua ba-mizaro v'nit malei kol ha-olam shim'o. So it says in the Torah on Ephraim that he would be full of nations. And that's in the bracha that Yaakov gives to all the children. And it was also the day that the sun stood still. And Yehoshua comes from Ephraim. Okay? I don't know about that, but... Okay. And Malbim has his own explanation. So maybe we'll read Malbim's introduction now, since we're talking about it. So Malbim has questions that he starts out with. So, Bikina hazot, shalosh pamim, ech naflu giburim, mahu hasefer hayashar. So he notes, we're going to see that three times in the Kina, it says, ech naflu giburim, how the mighty have fallen. Sound familiar? It's from the Bible, from this poem. Okay, it says it three times, we're going to see it. And then he asks, what is the Sefer HaYashar? And then he goes into something interesting where his other question is his challenge in explaining the poetic aspect of the poem, because if, as we've seen in the Malbim consistently, he doesn't believe that things are repeated just for the sake of poetry. He thinks that each time something is repeated, that it gives it a different, richer meaning, deeper meaning. And then he alludes to his how he explains it in his introduction to Sefer Yeshaya. And Sefer Yeshaya, I was reading about it, was the second commentary that the Malbim wrote, and he wrote, and Yeshaya is full of all these literary forms. And so he I didn't read it because it was way too long, but he has a very long introduction about how he views all these literary devices. Okay, so let's see what he says. Lomed et b'nei Yehuda keshet, to teach the sons of Yehuda the bow. And then I think that Mem Shin Shin said, Mishem Shamayim Shemesh begiv'on dom halo hiktuval sefer yeshar. So he quotes a verse in Joshua about the sun standing still, being recorded in Sefer HaYashar. Shekivein al ha-sefer ha-niskar b'parsha kitisa. So he has a totally different take. And he says that this is, Sefer HaYashar is referring to psukim in Parshat Kitisa, which is in Devarim, which was one of the opinions that we saw, but he's saying a very specific group of psukim. Shamar Sham, because it says that, or, I'm sorry, Shmot, which was the only book that we hadn't seen yet, not Devarim, Shmot, Kitisa, which we just read a week and a half ago. It's the Parsha with the golden calf. And this is at the end of Kitisa, where it is talking, Hashem gives Moshe the Yud Gimel Midot, and he gives him this way of reconciling the Jewish people with Hashem when we sin. You guys all know the Yud Gimel Midot. It's Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum, Bechanun, etc. Okay, Katuv Lecha Kol HaDivrim Ha'ela. So when he's giving Moshe the second tablets, which was all part of that, it says, write these things. Ki Al Pi HaDivrim Ha'ela Karti Yitcha Brit, because it's by way of these things that I made a covenant with you. Behem HaDivrim HaNiskar Sham Lamala. And those are the things that are written above. So he says, behold, I am establishing to you a covenant against or corresponding to your whole nation, and I will do niflaot. What does niflaot usually mean? Miracles or wonders. But Rashi there actually says that at this stage in the game, there aren't any more new miracles in Tanakh, right? We had all the big miracles. So there's another word that we see in the 10 plagues, getting close to Pesach, where we use this word is used, that says that Hashem's going to differentiate, he's going to separate between the Jews and the Egyptians. Okay? So Rashi there feels forced to translate this word niflaot here to how I'm going to differentiate you among all the nations. Okay, but the Malbim here is going to explain it as miracles. I think we're going to see how. And so, what are the conditions that that Hashem's going to make these miracles? Guard yourself lest you establish a covenant with those who live in the land already, because Hashem made them promise that they would garish, expel from before them all the seven nations. Kamosha Katav Shem, as it's written there, behold, I am expelling from before you the Emory and all the different, then it goes on to the different nations, B'tnai, on the condition, Shelo Yikartui Mehem Brit, that you don't make a covenant with them. Okay, now this is interesting, because as long as you don't form relationships with the seven nations, I will expel them. But if you don't, if you do start establishing relationships with them, it seems Hashem's going to make them stay there, and then they're going to become a snare for the Jewish people. And he promised them that if they don't establish the relations, then Hashem will expel them in a miraculous way, and that will be the miracle. Okay? And then they won't need a bow in war. Just like it was in the time of Yehoshua, when they seemed to be on their way to really separating themselves. So I just realized this, we can kind of understand this word in both of it, that Hashem will do wonders if we differentiate ourselves. from them. So in both ways. She'azeh omer neged kolam chayas haniflaot. And that's what it means. I'm going to do all these wonders before you. That it'll be very easy for you to fight these wars. I'm going to miraculously expel them, just like it was for Yoshua. But we learn in the book of Judges that in fact Israel did not continue to fight the war that Joshua had started, and this is why we have all the problems in Sefer Shoftim that's written in Sefer HaYashar, which according to the Malbim is just this, these few psukim in Parshat Ki Tisa. They needed to fight wars. V'Hashem hiniach min ha'amim shelo kavshum. And Hashem purposely didn't allow them to completely kibush ha'aretz, to completely conquer them. He left them there. K'mo she'katav ve'ela ha'goyim asher hiniach Hashem l'nasot ba'am et Yisrael. Just like it says, and these are the nations that Hashem left to test them, Israel. Rak l'ma'an dat dorot ha'ba'im l'lamdam nechama. So that they would then need to learn war later on. They would need to learn war, because they didn't properly fulfill this covenant with God, and they were left to test Israel. Chamishit Sarnei, and this is why the Plishtim were left there, because the Plishtim are not one of the seven nations. Mivuar she Plishtim nisharu az leman yitzdarchu Yisrael lemod keshet. So the Plishtim were left as sort of the training ground for Bnei Israel to learn how to use a bow. Ya'an shelo shamru at hatnai hakatuv v'sefer yashar, because they unfortunately did not keep this condition. V'zeh shamar b'kinato l'lamed, and that's why it says in David's kina, to teach, ratzon lomar mashi yitztarech l'lamed et b'nei Yehuda, that it was necessary to teach b'nei Yehuda the bow. Zeh ein min hatema, ki halo hi ketuva al sefer hayashar. And this shouldn't be a question, because behold, it's written in those psukim in Kitisa, v'hu hamakbil umat shamar b'Yoshua sh'at shamru ma shekatav v'sefer ha'yishar. And he says, and this is in counter-distinction to what's written in Yehoshua, where they actually were keeping the laws. Amad ha'shamash ad yakum goyovav halo hi k'tuval sefer ha'yishar, that the sun indeed stood still, and it was done in a miraculous way, v'lo hu tzrechu l'keshet, and they didn't need the bow. Okay, so that is the Sefer HaYashar. I finished everything about it, except for the Nitziv, which I think you'll read on your own if you want to. Okay, so let's read the Kina now. Okay, so starting with Pasuk Yod Tet. Hatzvi Yisrael abamotecha chalal ech naflu giborim. So the Tzvi, it's a big question, what exactly it means. So here it translates it, oh, beauty of Israel, that it's referring to the beauty of Israel. There's an expression, Eretz HaTzvi, which is also a yeshiva, I think, for Americans in Israel. It could also be referring to Yonatan and Shaul and other translations. You can see they had difficulty translating it. On your high places shall lie the slain, meaning, you know, and this is the whole issue of why, thank God, we argued against giving up the Golan Heights and any kind of agreements, because it's the heights, it gives us the advantage. And here are corpses lying on the high places, meaning we had the advantage geographically, and yet we still died. Ech naflu giborim, how the mighty have fallen. Here it translates it as heroes. Kaf, al tegidu begatz, al tevasru bechutzot ashkalon. Don't tell it in Gat, and don't give the news in the outside streets of Ashkelon. And here the Malbim, I didn't include it, but you can imagine he explains the difference between Tagid and Tevaser. Pen tismachna benot plishtim, pen talozna benot ha'arelim. Lest the daughters of plishtim rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised one be happy, be joyous. Okay, so you'll see in italics it says benot plishtim, and benot, I should have also italicized benot ha'arelim, because you're going to see later in italics I included benot Yisrael in the beginning, kaf dalet, when we get to that. Okay, kaf aleph, hare b'gilboa al tal ve'al matar lechem. Don't let there be any dew or rain on top of Gilboa, because it's such a sad time for them. Stay trumot, or the fields of the offerings. There shouldn't be, sorry, nor shall your fields have offerings. Kisham nik'al magen giborim, magen sha'ul, li mashiach b'shamen. Because there, the shield of the heroes was deemed disgusting. Goel nefesh, if you know that expression, like something's really disgusting. Geula is with an aleph, in case anybody was thinking that for Pesach. Mm-hmm. So, and the shield of Shaul was without being anointed with oil. So that's the second thing that we're going to focus on, but I want to read it as its whole poem, so you get the idea of it. Okay, and that was the mention of Shaul alone. Kaf bet, midam chalim michelev giborim, keshet yonet, oh, sorry, so let's translate that. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, keshet yonatan lo nasog achor, v'cherev Shaul lo tashuv rekam. The bow of Yonatan would not turn back, nor did Shaul's sword return empty. This is just interesting imagery that we have here of Shaul and Yonatan both as warriors, and Yonatan associated with the bow, and Shaul, as we spent a lot of time talking a while ago, always associated with his sword. Kaf Gimel, Shaul v'Yonatan hane'ahavim v'hane'imim b'chayehem, uvimotam lo nifradu minisharim kalu ma'arayot gaveru. So Shaul and Yonatan were beloved and pleasant in their lives. And I think this is also really important because we, just reading it from David's perspective, you sometimes get the idea, like, who was this Shaul guy? But we saw that, you know, when David did finally have men band around him, that they were the deplorables, you know, that people really were, for the most part, happy with Shaul, and he was beloved, and Yonatan as well. And in their death, they were not separated. And they were lighter than eagles and stronger than lions. Okay, Kafdalid Benot Yisrael. So this was a parallel to the Benot Plishtim and the Benot Ha'arilim. El Shaul Bechana Hamalbishchem Shani Im Adanim Hamale Ade Zahav Al Levushchen. So daughters of Israel, weep over Shaul, who dress you in crimson with delights, who put golden ornaments on your clothes. So we also get a clue here about how the quality of life during the time of Shaul, in that, you know, women and girls were able to afford extras like this. Kafhe, Ech Naflu Giborim. This is the second time that we see Ech Naflu Giborim, how the mighty have fallen, Betocha Melchama, in the midst of battle. Yonatan, Abamotecha Chalal. John, Yonatan, on your high places you were slain. Kafav, Sarli Alecha, Achi Yonatan. I am very distressed about on you, my brother Yonatan. Na'amta li ma'od. You were very pleasant to me. Niflata ahavatcha li me'avat nashim. Your love was more pleasant for me, was more wonderful to me than the love of women. So this is a very famous line about Yonatan and David. The rabbis here say, why does it say women in plural? So the rabbis explain it's referring to both Avigal and Michal. We go into a lot of other explanations. We spent time on this before, so I didn't want to spend a lot of time on it. That it was completely unconditional love, and it was love truly of the spirit. There was nothing physical about it, because the rabbis explain in some of the commentaries that with women, you might love them for some, a man might love a woman for, because of physical aspects, whereas this was completely devoid of all that. It was completely spiritual love. Ech naflu giborim, how the mighty have fallen, vayovdu klei milchama, and the weapons of war have perished. We've lost, they've perished. Okay, so I think you get a sense from it also, David's love for Yonatan, and to compare how he eulogizes Shaul in a more formal sense, and how he eulogizes Yonatan in a much more personal, emotional sense. But yet, he is definitely eulogizing both. And it's a very public eulogy. I was listening to other shiurim where the rabbi was really focused on David's the publicity. He wasn't saying that David was not being sincere, but he was saying that David made sure to do this publicly because David had been living with the Plishtim this whole time. And people could have easily said, this is Rabbi Alan Schwartz, people could have easily said that David gave the Plishtim all the, he was like a double agent, you know, like giving them Shaul and Yonatan's whereabouts, and that's how they were able to be killed so easily. And David wants the Jewish world to know that he's mourning them just as much as anyone, and he's as upset in that he definitely did not give over state secrets during his time in Palestine, in the Plishtim area. Okay, so that's the Kina. That's the lamentation. And it's really beautiful, and you see that there are several expressions in the English language that we have through this. And I want to then focus on the anointed shield. Okay, so let's go to page... Well, let's do the Malbim. Okay. Let's start with Yotet. So we'll go through them. I edited the Malbim heavily to try to do what I thought was the most interesting. Okay, so let's start with Yotet. Sorry, I can't edit it anymore. Hatzvi. So Ratzon Lomar Halo Hagam Shehutzrachu Lomod Kashet Bekolze Po Hayalahem Linsoach Gam B'Derech Hatzava. So he's saying he just went and explained this miraculous warfaring versus the natural warfaring, and how Yehoshua merited the miraculous one. But here, it was necessary to teach them the bow, because they needed to succeed in a natural way from two reasons. So he's going to give us the two reasons. Mitzad hamakom shemisham lachmu. First, by way of the actual place that they were fighting, shehaya bahar, because it was in a mountain. Shefilu chalash lamala ra'ui sheyenatzeach. Because when you fight with the advantage of being on higher plane, geographically, even weaker people can succeed. And that's why it calls them the tzvi, the beauty. And then, Aleph mitzad shamakom shem... I'm not reading right. V'zeshe katav ech tzvi Yisrael v'tifar tam, and their glory... That's why they're called Tzvi, because they're glory. Alba motecha chalal. You have corpses on your high places. Ech nasa chalal alba motecha. How could there be corpses on your high places? Behalo nilcham ala bama. You were fighting on a high place. By definition, you had the advantage. And bet, mitzad Yisrael v'tifartam. No, sorry, I did that again. Mitzad giboratam. And secondly, from the side of their heroicness, their mightiness. She'al zeomar ech naflu giborim. How the mighty have fallen. Ulefize mevorah shelo levad shelo ezram Hashem v'derech hashkachi. And explained that Hashem was not, quote-unquote, watching over them at this time. There was no hashkacha pratis for them. Hashem had sort of abandoned them here. Aval lehafich ki behashkachato nilcham bam al derech ki tzoram machram behashem hiskiram. But the opposite, Hashem's hashkacha, was actually to the negative, that Hashem allowed them to be defeated. That this defeat, with their natural fighting and their natural advantages of both being on a high place and mighty, this defeat was clearly from Hashem. And that's why it was the opposite of the Yehoshua story. Okay? Kaf Aleph. So just to remind you, that was don't let there be any dew or rain. Yekonin ki behadar zchut Shaul ubanav tehadar meham hashafa hashmamit. So he's lamenting that without the merit of Shaul and his sons, that by withholding the merit of Shaul and his sons, it would also be withholding the heavenly flow from above. And Harei beGilboa v'shtei Trumot. So these are the choice fields that are on the heights of the mountains and high, there won't be any dew and there won't be any rain on them. Halo me'ata yisulak me'atam shefa hatal. It will be removed from them, this flow of rain and dew. Achar ki sham nig'al magen gibrim. Because there, the shields of the heroes were disgusted by it. Uba er devarav ki lo kiven b'magen zel magen mamash ha'mashuach b'shamen. Okay, so now here's where the Malbim explains what is this shield. So he's not talking about an actual shield. He's talking about a shield that is anointed with oil. Rak al magen militzi. It's a metaphorical shield. Shehu zchut Shaul. What is this shield? The shield is the merit of Shaul ubanav and his sons. Sheh zchuto magen la'amo. Because his merit, not his physical shield, but rather his merit, would protect on his nation. And hold back those who are against it. And that's what it says, the shield of Shaul without being anointed with oil. Magen habilti mashuach b'shemen. That it wasn't anointed, sorry. Ritzon lomar, lo magen shel or. This is not a leather shield. Rak magen shel zchut umasim tovim nigal. Rather, it's the shield of merit and good deeds that was disgusted. Ki lo ho'il lehem zchuto, because they didn't do any use for him, his merit. Ein ze ki im nistalek ha'shefa milamala, because the whole flow from above was stopped. Okay, so now that we've read about the shield, let's read the other commentaries on the shield. So right below, so we're going to Midrash Tehillim. So the Midrash Tehillim says, Rabbi Yosef ben Nehorai and Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, chad amar maginosh ha'shol nimshach, aval hu lo nimshach. So one said the shield of Shaul was oiled, but it wasn't oiled. V'chad amar lo hu v'lo magino. Oh, sorry. One says the shield of Shaul was anointed, but he wasn't anointed. Meaning this is sort of a dig on Shaul that he lost his anointment as the king. And the other one says Lohu velo magino. No, both weren't anointed. Shenamar magin Shaul bli mashiach b'shamen. Because it says explicitly, even his shield wasn't anointed. So they're taking this is why Shaul was able to be killed, because, and it's kind of odd to put this in David's mouth, because it sounds like he's really upset, and this would not be an appropriate time to take a dig at Shaul and his own anointment, but that's how the rabbis are reading it. And the Radak says, bli mashiach b'shamen, without being anointed in oil. Klomar ken nigal magin giborim shashaul ki ilu lo haya hamagin mashuach b'shamen ki mashuchim hamagin kedel hachliko shelo yavruhu kli zayin. So he's explaining that in warfare, the men had these leather shields, and they would actually anoint them with oil so that when they would try to pierce them, it would be too slippery and they wouldn't be able to do it. And then he says, there are those minority of Mefarshim who say that it's as if Shaul was no longer anointed in the oil of the king. Okay, so you can see why the Radak would put that second, because it seems much more sense to make it, he just wasn't able to defend him anymore, and it wasn't anointed in oil. Okay, so back to the Malvim. Benot Yisrael. So Kaf Dalet is top of page 4. Achar shebishne psukim hakodmim konen al Shaul v'Yonatan v'yachad yatkil konen al kol echad b'fnei atzmo. So the Malvim is alluding to the literary structure, which I don't think I gave credit. This was Rav Bazak, the way that I divided it up in his thing. So the Malvim is also alluding to that. He says after he eulogized both Shaul and Yonatan together, he now begins to lament each one in of its himself. Vayomer al Shaul, and what does he say about Shaul? And on him he didn't cry, because Shaul was chasing after him. So he also notes the qualitative difference between the way he eulogizes each of them. Alav yivku benot Yisrael. But even though David might not be crying about Shaul, the daughters of Israel are crying on him. Mitzad ha'to'alet shehesigo mimenu hamavishim, because he was able to dress them in all this finery. Kaf hei. Eich, so this is where he starts to lament on Yonatan. Kafvav, sar le'umat shamar Shaul benot Yisrael yivku, Omer she'al Yonatan yivkehu be'atzmo. In contrast to how he said on Shaul that the daughters of Israel would cry, here he says on Yonatan that he himself will cry. Ki tzar li alecha achi Yonatan, because it distresses me upon you, my brother Yonatan. Umeve'er sheze mishnei panim. This can be explained in two ways. Echad mitzad tuvo v'tzidkato, from his goodness and his righteousness. V'ze shamar na'amta li ma'od, you were very pleasant to me, that's why it says that. And bet mitzad godel ahavato, and also from the aspect of the greatness of his love. Shelo haita domel la'avat nashim, because it wasn't similar to the love of women. Shehi ahavat harav o hamo'il. Maybe it's ha'erev, because this is love of the evening, which might be alluding to physical things. O hamo'il, or... it's a useful love. There's, you get some use out of it. Rak ahava atzmayit. It was only love, pure love. Ve'alzeh omer niflata li shelo haita domeh la'avat nashim shehi avat ha'erev ha'amuyil. Rak avat... Oh, I did that again. Me'od me'avat nashim. Your love is more wonderful to me than the love of women. Ve'zeh l'umat she'amar she'al sha'ul yifkua nashim mitzad ha'amuyil. And this is also in distinction that on Sha'ul, why were the daughters of Israel crying? Because of what they got from him, the usefulness of it, utility of it. Shani im adanim, all the scarlet and all the jewels, shesigo mimenu. Aval ha'ava al Yonatan niflet, v'na'ala me'od al ha'ava zo. But my love for Yonatan is above and beyond this utility love. Kavzayin eich misayam bikinato, he concludes in his lament, ki lefamim yiflu giborim, v'yisharu giborim achrim tachtam. Sometimes mighty people, heroes, will die, will fall, but there'll be other heroes after them. She'az hagam she'naflu giborim lo avdu kli mechama shalom. Because even, so that even when these heroes would die, you wouldn't have lost their vessels of war with them. Ki yishtamesh behem hagibor ra'ehu haba tachtav. Because the next one will also use those vessels, who the next hero that comes under him. Aval po, Ech naflu gibarim, but here, how the mighty have fallen, bichlal, in general, kilo nishar ed achad, because there's not even one left. Valide kach avdu kli mechama. And therefore, we've even lost their vessels. Nobody can use their vessels. Ki en mishishtamesh maham. Okay. So here we have just how tragic it was, the death of Shaul and Yonatan. But I think we're hopeful, because where Shaul depended on his sword, we've seen that David is dependent on his faith in Hashem, and that's how we're going to move on, with David uniting the kingdom and everyone coming under him and being able to fight these wars and succeed. Okay, so I'm going to stop it.